RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the December 18th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Gavon. I am Jason Foy, and this week's episode of the podcast is presented by Roman. And later on in the show, myself and Daniel are going to tell you about the special offer that Roman has for the MMA Report Podcast listener, which is a free online visit and free two-day shipping. We'll tell you about that later on in the podcast. Of course, a lot of this week's show will be about what we saw happen last week at UFC 245. We're going to preview this weekend's MMA. We've got two Bellator cards, also one UFC event. We'll talk, give you a little nugget about drug testing in Bellator, ESPN raising the price of UFC pay-per-views. Also talk about a massive signing for the PFL. They have signed Rory McDonald, all that, and so much more coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast, including my interview with Mike Rodriguez, who fights on Saturday on the UFC fight card. Daniel, man, last weekend I was up in Detroit, went out for a little bit to watch the UFC pay-per-view. Was at a Twin Peaks location, which I'll say, Daniel, if someone's in the out in the Detroit area, in the Troy, Michigan area, Twin Peaks was a nice little location to go watch the fights at.
What made it so nice, Jason?
TVs galore, bro. I mean, it was TVs everywhere. It just, everywhere you looked. You know, the only thing is the manager did not have it on the right channel when the pay-per-view started. He had it on a channel that was the early prelim, so instead of seeing the walkouts for Peter Yan, Uriah Faber, we saw the walkout of Puna Soriano coming to the cage. So, but that got corrected. But yeah, it was good. Stayed there till the end of the Amanda Nunes, Jermaine De Armandame fight, because this was a long pay per view. And I think that if there's any criticism of UFC 245, I think it's probably an example of why you do not do three title fights on one pay-per-view, because if they all go 25 minutes, it could be a long night of fights. But you know, I watched the main event and co-main event after the fact. Of course, I already knew the results. And you know, when it comes to the main event, Daniel, if I had to describe that fight in one word, it would be enjoyable.
It was definitely one of the best fights of the year, and honestly, that's not what I expected at all. It's surprising that, I mean, this fight basically went 25 minutes, and it's surprising that between these two guys, Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington, these guys have risen to the top of the welterweight division, and it all started off with their wrestling base. And we saw zero takedowns attempted, I believe, from either of these two gentlemen. And that leads to, an entertaining conflict. And, man, this was one hell of a fight, and it was broken down pretty easily, man. It was two rounds of Colby to start. You could have gone round two for Usman, honestly. It was razor thin. Round four was pretty close, too. But three and four for Usman, it was an absolute fun contest to watch. The crowd was into it. Colby had the high volume output with his strikes, and he did a whole hell of a lot better than I would have expected in this fight. If you told me this was going to play out primarily on the feet, I would have thought Usman would have won convincingly with Colby doing halfway decent. But this was a fight where Colby had his moments, Jason. This was absolutely like a fight of the year contender. It was one of the more memorable fights of the entire year to close out the year. And man, what an ending with Usman putting down Covington, raining down the punches. Referee stops the fight, and it's kind of ironic that Colby, doing all this trash talk, complained of breaking his jaw, after the third round. But overall, for those that watch this main event, I mean, this fight absolutely 100% delivered. It was one of the best fights of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tremendous fight. I mean, you saw with the scorecards, the fact that they were, you know, different things. You know, one was 3-1 Usman, one was 3-1 Covington, and everyone was 2-2. And I don't disagree with any of those, because the rounds were so close. But I think one of the things that, you know, particularly going back and watching the fight, is you see how much of the power advantage that there was for Kamaru Usman. And he went out there and he did what he needed to do. And, you know, obviously Colby, after the fact, obviously not happy with Mark Goddard. I don't have a problem with the stoppage. Maybe Goddard lets it go on for maybe 5-10 more seconds. But overall, I don't have an issue with the stoppage. You know, you look in, what was it, the first or second round, where, you know, Covington lands a kick to essentially the belt line. To me, it was not a groin shot. I understand, obviously, why Colby has it there. A clear eye poke by Colby later on in the fight that his tweets seem not to think what it is, but it was. I mean, a clear win for Kamaru Usman. But, you know, the thing that as you look forward, you know, you look past this fight is what is next for Kamaru Usman. And obviously, there's three names that are going to stick out. Two, to me, are much more viable. And the third one, I think if you're really seeking a money fight, is where you go if you're Kamaru Usman. But, you know, it's got to be either Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, and kind of the third option would be Conor McGregor if you're looking for a money fight. I got to think that right now, if you're Kamaru Usman, you know, I think clearly if Conor was offered him, he would take that in a heartbeat. But I think if you're looking at what makes the most sense for him from a business side of the sport, to me, it's got to be Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, I think if you're the UFC, the fight you make is Masvidal versus Usman. I think the fight that's going to happen, though, is going to be Usman versus Leon Edwards. Just because I feel as though Masvidal might talk himself into another fight, because it seems like for him, the welterweight championship is important, but it's more about just doing the biggest possible fight. And for Jorge Masvidal, the fight versus Kamaru Usman is not it. There are other options out there. Hell, a fight between Masvidal and Colby Covington is probably a bigger fight than Masvidal versus Usman in terms of like interest, which is a sad thing for Kamaru, who, you know, his star certainly grew. Being involved with this fight with Colby Covington, Covington's really a heater where he warms up whoever is opposite him in the cage. He brings people to watch the fight. People are going to pay attention. For Kamaru, he's incredibly talented, but he still hasn't really connected with the audience, and that kind of makes him less of an intriguing fight for Masvidal. If I was the UFC, I would book Masvidal versus Usman. There are plenty more intriguing Conor McGregor fights that I would look into, namely Conor's got to get in there with Nurmagomedov at some point. I mean, that to me is the money fight. But I think the fight that makes the most sense that will happen is Leon Edwards. You talk about a guy who's put together one hell of a resume and just waiting in line. I mean, the wins over Nelson, Dos Anjos, Cerrone, to go along with the five victories they had prior to that, eight wins in a row in the UFC, he makes the most sense from a sporting perspective. But just to answer your question, oh, and one last note, in terms of money fights that we might see, obviously Conor's there, and then we saw today Kamaru mentioned George St. Pierre, which I know he's not, you know, he's retired and he's not a part of the pool, but he is still training, and I think that fight's also possibly on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, I know there's various people who have talked about, they think that ultimately GSP will have another fight. I don't know if Kamaru Usman is a big enough a name, big enough money that is going to get GSP. You know, I think that, you know, to me, it should be Leon Edwards. He's, quote-unquote, the most deserving. But I do think it will ultimately be Jorge Masvidal just because of the financial aspect.
Well, here's one other point I want to make about this that I kind of forgot. If you're Jorge Masvidal, why you might not want to take it. Kamaru Usman's name might be the reality check. Because the thing is, you can get all the hype, you can get some big wins, but you get in the cage with Kamaru Usman and he's a reality check. He was a reality check for Colby Covington. This dude is outright talented. Mm-hmm. And for Masvidal, when I'm analyzing this fight, I don't think he should be a big dog in this one. Not a major dog, but I feel very confident in picking Kamaru Usman to beat Jorge Masvidal. I just feel like he has way more tools. Like, he can wrestle him down to the ground, and he's halfway competent on the feet. I mean, I think obviously in a stand-up affair, Jorge Masvidal is going to have a whole lot of success. But you begin to look at Masvidal's victories, you can kind of start picking him apart. The win over Till, the win over Askren was very quick, and the fight with Diaz was very back and forth, and he fought a guy in Diaz who isn't the most frequent competitor. So for Usman, he's a reality check in that for Masvidal, you talk about all this hype and stuff that's going on. He goes in that cage. Kamaru has the talent level to just grab that rug from under him and pull it out.
I know this fight will never happen, Daniel. But if you said 4 months from now, Kamaru Usman is taking on Douglas Lima, who you picking?
4 months from now? I'm picking – oh, it's a tough one because Douglas really, like, he evolved a level – and he impressed me so much against Rory. I would still take Kamaru Usman. And again, it goes back to the fact that Kamaru to me is just – like when you look at all the champions in the UFC, I think he really checks a lot of the boxes, like an elite wrestler, great top control, really well done on the stand-up. And I think because he has all of those tools in his toolbox, he can kind of warp his game around Douglas Lima. But that still would be a dynamite fight for sure. And, it's tough, man. The welterweight division is really interesting in the UFC. But again, when I look at Usman, I think this fight was really close against Covington. But it did also showcase that a guy who has a stand-up approach can outscore Usman on the feet by using volume, but just being a little more smarter. I mean, Usman was kind of like waiting his turn to land those power shots, and he was landing the more significant strikes. But if you are a champion, you still are vulnerable if you went up against Colby Covington and he outstruck you for a big part of this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think my pick would be Lima, because obviously this is not the Douglas Lima that, got just out-grappled by Ben Askren, 5-6 years ago. This is a guy that has clearly shown a much bigger, the improvements in the takedown defense. I mean, obviously if Usman could take the fight to the ground, it changes that fight dynamic. But, man, it's one of those fights just as a fight connoisseur. That's a fight I would love to see, but I just know it's never going to happen.
Yeah, it's just never going to happen. I mean, Lima's too valuable to Bellator, and it's a bit of a shame with some of these guys because we don't get a good sense of where they stand in the whole landscape of the sport, because they could theoretically be the best guy in the world, but it's practically impossible to be recognized as the best fighter in your weight class but not fight in the UFC. The only way you can do it is if you fight at women's lightweight. That's about the only way you can do it. I mean, and again, potentially down the line, we'll see. I mean, Colby's just one win away from getting a title shot again. I mean, this fight was razor thin. And if he goes out there and he takes on, Tyron Woodley, gets a win, he gets the title shot again. I mean, that's how close he is when you look at this performance. And I wonder if he's going to have any regrets for not attempting a takedown. Like, I understand Kamaru Usman literally never been taken down in his entire career. But Colby, a guy whose bread and butter is just takedown attempt after takedown attempt, he didn't attempt a single one. He didn't even get a sense of whether he could have just gone out there and out wrestled him. And I wonder if that's going to be an adjustment to his game in a rematch if we do see him employ the wrestling approach.
You know, when you talk about that word adjustments, I'm really shocked that we didn't see Max Holloway make any adjustments in terms of the leg kicks Alexander Volkanovski threw on Saturday.
Which, honestly, I know we're heading towards a rematch probably. I'm not super interested in it because when I watched this fight, I just felt like Volkanovski was the better fighter. Those leg kicks were just too much. And it's funny, I listen to a lot of shows and people like misidentify the fact that Max Holloway has the bigger reach than Volkanovski. It's been driving me nuts. People are like, yeah, man, Volkanovski overcame the height and reach advantage. I'm like, no, he had the reach advantage. Jason Floyd told me last week. And, yeah, man, when I watched this fight, it was close. There were a lot of close rounds. It was very fun. But when I watched this one, I just thought, man, Volkanovski is just the better fighter. And for Max Holloway, I don't know if he's ever going to get that championship again. Like, we may have already seen his peak, which is a bit of a shame. But, I mean, this was a crowning moment for Alexander Volkanovski where he went up against a guy who had established himself as just a premier stand-up fighter. And just the simple from the get-go, the machine gun like leg kicks was the recipe for his success throughout this fight to get the decision.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these, I don't know if I'm either way on whether there should be an immediate rematch. I mean, I think obviously, the fact that, he did have, multiple featherweight title defenses, but I would probably be just as interested if you tell me the next fight for Alexander Volkanovski is to beat Magomed Sharipov. I would probably be just as interested in that. I don't know if Zabit, could defeat Volkanovski, because I think obviously the question that you would have going in that fight is, what would Zabit look like in round four and round five? And until we see that, that's always going to be a big question mark in terms of that. I mean, it wasn't a massive shocker to me that Volkanovski won. I think you could kind of see it. I mean, I didn't expect it to happen. But yeah, I'm with you there in terms of Max Holloway. Of course, the other title fight was Amanda Nunes going out there and getting a unanimous decision victory over Jermaine de Armandame. A very, very clear win for Amanda Nunes. And who the hell is next for Amanda Nunes? Because it's unfortunate because her success is now ultimately what's kind of put us in this situation of, I don't know who the hell she fights next. I mean, I know she mentioned she would like her next fight to be to defend the 145-pound title. Dana White was asked about it, and Dana White kind of had this look in his face of like, who the hell am I going to put her against?
Mm-hmm. That's so true, man. Yeah. Let me take a look at the women's featherweight rankings. Oh, there it's non-existent.
It's Megan Anderson.
It's Megan Anderson, and that's it. I mean, like, for Amanda Nunes, this fight was just an okay performance, which is like it tells you what we think of her, that a dominant decision outing was just an okay performance. For me, the expectation was a first or second round finish. And the problem was Jermaine Durandamé is incredibly tough and she survived. And damn, we kind of figured it because she has such a great background as a kickboxer. But Jermaine was great on the feet against Amanda. The problem was she couldn't keep it there. Mm-hmm. And Amanda just stayed on top, got the decision scorecard. With Amanda Nunes, I think if you're a viewer, what you're looking out of her is to get that Mike Tyson feel where every time she fights, you know it's going to be a first-round finish. And that's why it was kind of a downer and not necessarily a fight we'll talk about in the grand scheme of things when we look back at her tremendous run. It was just a night in the office, and it was the fight that really prolonged the pay-per-view, because it was the one championship fight where you felt confident that there would likely be an early finish. For what's next for her? I mean, look, what was supposed to be next for her was supposed to be Ketlin Vieira. She was supposed to go out there and beat Irene Adanya and have just 5 wins in a row in the UFC and have a shot. But Adanya played the role of spoiler, just a sick knockout in the first round. And at this point, you look at the women's bantamweight rankings, and Irene Adanya, despite only having 2 wins in a row, the quality victory over Ketlin Vieira honestly puts her in a title position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at those top 5 challengers. 1, Jermaine DeArmandame. 2, Aspen Ladd. 3, Holly Holm. 4, Juliana Pena. 5, Irene Adanya. Actually tied with Raquel Pennington at number 5. So, yeah, there's not a lot of – there's not an option that just magically sticks out to you. You almost feel like – you know, maybe should we have like an Aspen Ladd, Juliana Pena type fight or something along those lines to determine number one contender. But yeah, it's a tough spot. And of course, Clarissa Shields was there and she's, you know, kind of, you know, putting out this, you know, hey, I would be interested in fighting Amanda. And how about we do 1 boxing, 1 MMA? And Amanda's like, no, not interested. And that's like, it's refreshing, Daniel, to hear MMA Fire go, no, I'm not interested. If the boxer wants to fight me, they can come to my world, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah, dude, if Amanda Nunes should not go and box with Clarissa Shields, that would be a recipe for disaster. And look, man, Nunes should be interested in an MMA fight with Clarissa Shields because that'll be a nice day in the office. It'll be a day where the thing is, these fights pop. People would watch them, but it's not a fight the UFC can make right away. Clarissa Shields has to fight at least 2 times before she gets a title shot, because we can't have a situation where a person is making their debut against the greatest female fighter of all time. That's just illegal. That's dangerous. And we can't do it, even if Clarissa Shields is a world champion boxer. But the reason why that fight to me is possible is because there's such just a lack of interesting fights for Amanda Nunes, that if you're the UFC and you have an opportunity to make a fight with Amanda Nunes that like a casual fan will watch, then you have to do it 10 times out of 10. So honest to God, I think the UFC should take this Clarissa Shields thing seriously, Jason, because the thing is, Clarissa Shields calling out Amanda Nunes makes the front page of ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And the thing is, if you could get her in the cage with Nunes, if you could, or not even sign her, but like agree to a deal and give her a couple victories. She's been training for 1.5 years, make her look good, 1-2 fights, and you can in good conscience put her in the cage with Amanda Nunes. You have to do it, because honestly, it's like the one fight the UFC can do with Amanda Nunes where casual fans will tune in and watch, and then it will be an opportunity for Nunes to continue to build her brand, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's you could see it in Dana White's, you know, face. He has that, what do I do? I mean, you know, I think if you're Clarissa Shields, I mean, I would think if you're a PFL, I think you would have more interest than maybe the UFC has. But also, it makes you wonder, maybe is Clarissa Shields a part of Zuffa Boxing at some point? And, you know, Dana White has, you know, mentioned that, hey, you know, look, we're still doing this. That, you know, obviously they've hit some roadblocks, so we'll see what happens here. You know, you mentioned about, you know, Irene Aldana's win on the preliminary card, and I think, you know, for a lot of people, that is probably the biggest surprise. But, you know, Daniel, for me, my biggest surprise is, A, what Jose Aldo looked like at 135 pounds on Friday when he stepped on the scale. I've seen him look worse on the scale trying to make 145 than he did 135. And by God, Daniel, he went out there, even though the judges didn't give him the fight, I thought he won 29-28. I don't think it's a robbery. I just think it's a close fight. But to me, like, Jose Aldo, 135, all right, I'm in. I'm in. You got me.
Okay, yeah,
you know,
man.
I was not in it leading into this card. I was not in on him at 135. But after seeing what he looked like on Friday and then what he looked like on Saturday, all right, I'm in. I'm in on him at 135.
What this fight told me is I wouldn't be surprised if in the year 2020 he finds himself in a championship fight. The only reason why that might not happen is the timetable of Henry Cejudo. But Jose Aldo went out there, and whether it be Jose or Jose, he looked like the Aldo of old. I mean, not exactly 100%, but this dude competed against one of the top-tier bantamweights and won on my scorecard, too. I had him winning round two and three, and this was a textbook Marlon Moraes fight. The recipe's simple. Dude looks great in the first minute 30, and he looks fine in round two and three, but he really takes it down a level, and Aldo outstruck him. But this wasn't a fight where I thought, man, the next fight needs to be Aldo Cejudo. Jose Aldo needs to get a victory before he challenges Henry Cejudo. Yeah. And honestly, I think you can do a rematch between Aldo and Moraes. And I think that makes the most sense. But I mean, honestly, like when you look at this bantamweight picture, it's Moraes, it's Aldo now, Aljamain Sterling, and then of course the freaking robot Russian cyborg Peter Yan. Oh my God, was that a highlight reel outing for him or what?
Man, I mean, you know, I do want to. Someone want to mention about Jose Aldo before I go to Peter Yan. There was one thing that you was very clear about Jose Aldo, that one thing that has, for whatever reason, has been eliminated from his game. Where's the leg kicks?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sitting there watching the fight, and I'm going, and you know, I had, you know, buddies that I work with on the broadcast for the Bucks, and we're sitting there, and you know, they're kind of asking, I'm like, man, one thing I just don't see is Jose Aldo leg kicks, and that was a thing that you always knew about him. So that to me was the one thing. Peter Yan, I mean, the first round was very clear. It's just he's feeling him out, and then once he figured out Uriah's timing, Uriah looked like an old man.
Yeah. Peter Yan's like the polar opposite of Marlon Moraes. He peaks in rounds two, three, four, and five, and that's scary if you're holding a championship belt. I mean, what's this guy going to be like in four and five? And, man, Peter Yan was, to me, up and down the card. Yeah, that was the most impressive performance. And it helped that he was fighting Uriah Faber. If he was fighting Jose Aldo, the performance may not have been as impressive. I mean, this was a perfect, perfect fight for Peter Yan. He was taking on a guy with a name, a guy whose skill level probably isn't where a top seven bantamweight is. And he just picked him apart. This was a brutal fight, man. Freaking Uriah Faber, all bloodied. He has the heart of a champion, man. The dude was like waving to his family before he got massacred, and it was interesting. But yeah, Uriah Faber is an absolute star, and it makes you want to see him be successful because he just has the crowd in the palm of his hand, man. They wanted to see him be so successful, but Peter Yan shut him out. He was like a starting pitcher that threw a no-hitter against Uriah Faber. And at the end of the day, Yan isn't particularly marketable, largely due to the fact that he's an international fighter who doesn't have an outgoing personality. But inside the cage, this guy is, for my money, one of the most fun bantamweights to see because he's a bantamweight who punches like a damn heavyweight. He's got so much power with his hands and his kicks, and he vaulted himself into bantamweight consideration. Again, the way I look at this bantamweight picture, Moraes, Aldo, Yan, Sterling. You might as well do a mini tournament to put together a challenger for Henry Cejudo.
And you can't forget about Corey Sanhagen at 135. Yeah. You know, he was supposed to fight Frankie Edgar, but obviously that's fight right now is not happening because Frankie's going to fight this weekend against the Korean Zombie, a fight that we'll talk about this later, but I you know, to me that fight was only made to save a card. to me. That's why that fight was made. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, one of the things of, you know, kind of what, you know, Henry Cejudo is, I don't know, sometimes some of his videos, I don't take them serious, I guess is about the best way to put it. Like, can we get out of having the models just holding your belts or whatnot in the background of your videos? Like, I feel like, can we just get past this? But, I mean, look, the question with Henry Cejudo is, A, who, you know, what belt does he defend next? Does he defend the 125 belt? If that's the case, it's clearly Joseph Benavidez. But if it's 135, I mean, you mentioned there's, you know, Aljamain Sterling, there's Peter Yan, there's Corey Sandhagen, you know, Dominic Cruz is kind of, you know, out there as well. You know, the Jose Aldo fight, no, I'm with you. I think he's got to get the win. But, you know, if you told me Cejudo's defending the 35-pound title against next, it would be Sterling or Yan, one of the two.
Yeah, if I was going to tell you who he should fight at 135, it would be Aljamain Sterling. Henry Cejudo's next fight, in my opinion, should be against Joseph Benavidez. A couple things. Benavidez deserves this fight more than any of the bantamweights deserve the bantamweight fight. I mean, he's run through this flyweight division, and he has a win over Henry Cejudo. The second thing, when you look at all the potential fights from the UFC perspective, I believe Benavidez-Cejudo is the biggest fight they can make. The only caveat being maybe Cejudo Aldo would be bigger, but honestly, I don't think so. It's not like Benavidez Cejudo is going to sell out and do 500,000 pay-per-view buys, but I still think it's a bigger fight than Sterling Cejudo. And it's just a beautiful story that I think the UFC needs to tell, and that needs to be the first fight Cejudo has back. And that's a struggle. And the negative of having a double champion, especially if he's out on the shelf, it just stifles the division. So I believe that the next fight has to be at flyweight against Joseph Benavidez. That's the fight I personally want to see. And I just think you run it back. I mean, you have Corey Sandhagen a part of the mix. I mean, hell, you might even want to mix and match. And a fight that I really want to see, honestly, is Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo. Mm-hmm. I really want to see that contest. And if you want, you can put Aljamain Sterling, you know, do a rematch against Marlon Moraes and do those two fights and see who comes out as the clear-cut bantamweight contender. But yeah, that's kind of my general thought, Jason, is I think it should be Benavidez versus Cejudo next.
Yeah, no, those are all good options. And obviously, you know, health is, and when does actually Henry Cejudo, you know, going to be physically able to get back in there. Now, when you look at the preliminary card,
let's talk one thing about Faber real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I know that he's old, but I really want him to continue to fight. And if I was the UFC, Jason, this is what I would do. If Frankie Edgar loses to Korean Zombie, I think Edgar versus Faber would be a nice little legacy fight. It would be a fight. I think Edgar
already though.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, that's a good point.
And Dana White brought the point up in the post-fight presser. It's like, you know, Uriah, why are you fighting? You know, and that has to be a legitimate question. I mean, outside looking in, it doesn't appear that Uriah needs money. I mean, obviously, that would be the main reason why you would think, because, you know, look, I think it's got to be clear, if you're Uriah Faber, you know, you're not going to make a run towards the title. I mean, I think we both understand that. You know, if you want to have a Uriah Faber retirement tour, well, let's have him fight guys who are somewhere in that 12 to 18 range in terms of the rankings.
Let me give you one more suggestion then. Let's do that. For his next fight, give him a fight where you think he's going to win. You space it out. And then we do one last Uriah Faber fight, January 2021. And we put him against TJ Dillashaw. I want to see the story of Faber versus Dillashaw, and that can be his last fight.
Yeah, no. And do it in Sacramento.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, he's probably gonna get the hell beat out of him against TJ Dillashaw. But if I'm the UFC, man, what a story you can tell with that fight. So what I would be working towards. Dillashaw.
No, I'm with you on that one. I'm definitely with you on that one. You know, the preliminary card, obviously Jeff Neal's performance, going out there and defeating Mike Perry in 90 seconds. Mike Perry's now dropped 5-7. Obviously, I don't think it's a fight where the UFC is going to cut him at this point, but you got to wonder, are we closer than, you know, seeing Mike Perry versus Michael Page in a Bellator cage, which would seem to make a lot of sense, and it would probably get people more excited for a Michael Page fight than his fight coming up here next week. Omar Akhmadov, decision win against Ian Heinisch. Chase Hooper, obviously coming off that contender series, one of two contender series fighters to get a win, Puna Soriano being the other one. Nice win by Bran Moreno. And, man, I thought I was going to get my prediction right at Jessica Eye by split decision. I thought I was going to get it.
I know. You should have got it, man. I feel bad for you. I feel bad for Jessica Eye, you know, just because she missed weight by 5 pounds. And I know it was embarrassing. And she said it was because she was on her period or whatever, and she just couldn't sweat water weight. But it probably has a lot to do with the preparation also prior to cut in that. But, yeah, it's one of those things where she talked about it where it was just like her body just wasn't shedding weight, and she communicated with the other camp. But you feel bad because, to me, that's the story of Jessica Eye's performance is she missed weight by 5 pounds. So whatever. You mentioned it, man. To me, when you look at the prelims, Jesus, a lot of big performances. We already talked about Adania. Jeff Neal is going to be a part of the welterweight title picture sooner than later. I mean, just a big win over Mike Perry, and he just is a dynamic fighter, unbelievably fun to watch in appointment viewing television, and he's just racking up wins. Matt Brown, Ben Saunders was a fun fight. Ben Saunders was winning that fight just because he was on his back, really controlling, but then Brown got up, created space, finished him. Chase Hooper, it seems like this is a guy a lot of people care about coming off this victory. He's getting a lot of play. He's a little quirky, weird type of guy. Got that finish, the triangle choke, and on top landing down elbows. So Hooper comes across as a guy who might develop into a star. It just seems like right away people are giving him a lot of attention. And then Puna Soriano, geez Louise, man. It seemed like he had two bricks taped to his fist, and he put down Oscar Pacoda. So overall, I thought the prelims were just a major success for the UFC. It had a lot of intriguing names in play who had nice performances.
Yeah, it was a good night of fights. I watched the majority of this event live and caught the rest of it via DVR. And a great way for the final pay-per-view. Of course, we still do have one more UFC event coming up this week. That's going to be here on Saturday morning from South Korea. Early start time. Prelims will start at 2 a.m. East Coast time. Your main card at 5 a.m. East Coast time. We're going to get into that fight card here in a little bit, but right now I'm going to actually play you my interview that I did last week with Mike Rodriguez. He's going to be a part of this card. So here's my conversation with Mike Rodriguez. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man steps back inside the UFC Octagon, UFC on ESPN Plus 23 on Saturday, December 21st. It is Mike Rodriguez. Mike, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, last time we saw you, unfortunately, you didn't get the win, ultimately overturned to a no contest. Is there anything that you and the team ultimately took out of that fight that has been a big part of the preparations for this one?
Yes. We took a couple things. Things on technical standpoint, like fighting and everything, because ultimately, yes, he did get caught with whatever he had in his system, but at the end of the day, if you would just take that equation out, he still won the fight. It was still a win for him. So we just went back to the drawing board, looked at a couple of things, broke down a couple of things, and just picked apart things that we needed to brush up on and, you know, just fix those things. And went back to it. No, God, I'm sorry.
When Tyson calls you to let you know, hey, man, John failed his drug test, do you remember what your reaction was?
I said, oh, it makes sense. Because I hit him with some fucking shots. And he, I hit him with some shots. And he was like, he felt like a brick house. So I'm like, Jesus Christ. But, you know, it's unfortunate. Like, I feel like more bad for him. More than anything, because, like, you know, you work your ass off to get to this point, and then you go and you do something, you cheat. It's just like, you know what I mean? It sucks. It's just unfortunate for him. But, like, he should never did it. It's that simple.
You mentioned about hitting him, just kind of like, man, this guy's just not falling down. How often has that happened in your career where you hit somebody and you're like, oh my God, I should drop him?
Well, that's the thing. I learned because of that fight, fighting him, I learned that valuable lesson that there is people in this world that can take a shot from me or several and not go down. So I had to break up with the love of, you know, knocking people out and things. I just worry about executing, fighting my game, not so much constantly trying to finish the fight. You know what I mean?
Is that a tough mentality to get away from, or is it easy?
Well, I mean, the great Chael P. Sonnen always say, like, you know what I mean? Don't forget what brings you to the ball dance. You know what I'm saying? And that's what got me here. But at this level, is dudes are so tough. You know what I mean? You can't always one-shot everybody. You know what I mean? Everybody got breastplate of valor on. Sorry, that's just my reference. But, yeah, everybody's always, you know, guys are just durable. Guys are tougher. So it's a lot harder.
Is there anything that has been a point of emphasis for you to where you're at this stage of the training where you're just like, God, I'm tired of hearing this phrase from my coaches?
Wait, repeat that again. I'm sorry.
Are you at that point in camp where your coaches are just emphasizing something in particular? And you're just so tired of hearing it because you're like, Coach, I got it.
Yeah. When you, like, towards the end of the camp, I don't know if it's about anybody else. Well, I'm pretty sure it's about everybody. Because it's like you're going through the same regimen routine for 6 to 8 weeks, you know? Of course, things are different. You touch up on things. Like, you're like, okay, week one, we like this. Then by week three, we're like, that shit, we're going to throw it out. We're not going to use that. So things of that nature. So, like, at the end, you're just like, I just want to stop being told what to do. I'm done listening to y'all voices. I just want to just do what I want to do, do what I have to do, and just fight. You know, yeah. I'm pretty sure every fighter gets like that. Because you just get pulled. Not pulled every direction, but it's just you always being redirected. Like, oh, like, you remember, you got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do this. You got this structure, this regimen. You know, and you wanna have a little bit of fun. You wanna eat some cheesecake and stuff, you know?
Now, when you're not in training camp, are you a routine type of guy? Like, every day, like, okay, I pretty much get up around this time, and like you plan your day out like the same, or is it once you're out of camp, it's kind of like you just do whatever?
A little bit of both. Like, I like to be like in a gray area about that. I still be regimented and still do what I have to do because I still want to get better and things of that nature. But on the same token, like, instead of going to bed at like 10, I'll go to bed at like 11:30, get a couple games in, like, you know, things like that. But I just try to stay, I still stay regimented to training and stuff, but I have a lot more fun. It's not as stressful and strict.
What's the go-to video game right now?
I'm still in love with Siege. A good friend of mine, this kid, Pratt, out in Vegas, he had an extra PC and he sent it to me. So I've been playing, trying to get adapted to playing Rainbow Six Siege on PC. And let me tell you, it's a night and day difference. But I haven't been able to give it all my full attention because I've been training so much. So I would come, I'll play like one or two games and go to sleep usually.
Is it just more about this kind of what gets my mind off, kind of that grind of a fight camp?
Yeah, it just pulls you away from the training, like being in a gym, you know what I mean, of constantly working, because, you know, I think if you're like too I can't speak for everybody, but for me, when I'm too obsessive about something, like I'm too focused on one particular thing constantly all the time online or whatever, it kind of kills the, like, the spiciness, like, you know what I mean? It kills the juice of whatever it is, the excitement of it. So I like to just separate it, take it back from it, and then come back to it. That's what makes me still be in love with it, you know? So you can't just go 1,000% balls to the wall all the time. Like, I feel like you have to have like some sort of balance. I think it goes for everything.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I try to get that just in my everyday life. Your opponent here, he starts 1-2, but then he's just been on an absolute tear. Won his UFC debut back in August. Like, when you and the team kind of popped in the tape and you looked at him, was there something that you remember, like, immediately you saw, like, oh, man, he does this really well?
You know what? I haven't watched a single thing on him. Not one thing. I just been going off of what the coach has been saying about him. I heard he's a boxer. I heard he's really good counter striker. Heard he's good. Like he's really good. I just was like, all right, well, I got to focus, just start focusing on execution, not necessarily the things that he's good at, but the things that I need to put together to execute. I wasn't really focused on what he's doing, or what he brings to the table, but I heard he's really good. And look, from what I was told, it's going to be a fun matchup.
Is that a mentality you've always had, or as you've grown as a martial artist, you've kind of gone into that mentality?
No, so before I would like do my own research and like look up my opponents and stuff like that. And the more and more like as I'm getting older in the sport, I'm like, I realized it was creating a lot of anxiety for me in fights. Like worrying, it just I'll be too focused on what they're doing and not focused on what I'm doing. So that's what one thing I learned about the Allen fight when they swapped them over so quick, like. I was just building up this anxiety in my head. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I need to find out what he do, what this is, and the other. Let's just going out there and just, like, performing, you know? And, it was just ran me for a circus in my mentally. So, but this time around, I was just like, you know what? I'll let them handle that. Like, I'm not going to stress myself about that. And I'm just going to go and perform. Just listen to my coaches because they know way better than I do.
Mentioned anxiety. Is that? And I think it's a term I think a lot of fighters could probably relate to during fight week.
Yeah.
Like, how do you like bring yourself down to make sure it doesn't? It's not an issue when you're walking to the cage.
I've been honestly what I've been doing a lot this summer. I discovered like meditating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meditating a lot, so a lot of meditating. And like journaling and things like that. I mean, it's probably not the most exciting thing. What most people are probably like, oh, like thinking it's some sort of secret, but that's pretty much it. Because despite of like just this, the fight game alone, just everyday, day to day life, like there's a lot of stresses and a lot of anxiety of things, you know? So I didn't really think I had anxiety until like I actually like confronted it over the summer and stuff, and I just attacked upon it. I just learned how to what's best for me to execute it. I think everybody should try to do that, take the extra mile and see what it is they have and how to neutralize it, or not even neutralize it, how to control it and not let it get the best of you. And that's what I did, and it's been working for me great.
And of course you're going to get on that long flight. Are you downloading some Netflix shows? Like how do you plan to get through this one?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do tonight. I got to do that tonight. I had to make a note to myself about downloading stuff. And I got to download a couple of things because there's a couple of shows I want to watch that I haven't been able to watch because I just been gung-ho training, you know? So I haven't been able to watch some stuff, but I'm going to put a little thing together for myself and watch it.
What's on the list?
So I watched the other night, I watched the first episode of that show, Pennyworth. It's on Epix. It's about Alfred Pennyworth. It's like before he started working with Batman and the Wayne family and stuff like that. It's really sick. So I started watching that. I want to get more involved into that. I want to see this Mandalorian that everybody's talking about. I want to see the hype on the Baby Yoda. Those things that come to mind. Oh, and The Watchmen. I forgot. The Watchmen on HBO. I'm going to watch that. So, yeah.
Yeah, like I want to watch The Irishman, but like I can't, I'm going to watch the thing.
That too.
It's like 4 hours long. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah, I know.
I'm going to watch like in two or three sittings.
That's what most people are doing. I saw a guide on, I think it was like Reddit or something, and it was like how to break down The Irishman in a mini series, and they was like, watch this on that one. That's why it was pretty funny, but yeah.
Yeah. But of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here on ESPN Plus. Safe travels overseas, Mike, as always. Appreciate time. Of course, let me know the fight on social media. Anybody else you want to shout out?
Hey, I want to give a huge shout out to Killcliff. They helped me out throughout this whole camp, supplying me with those their drinks, signature drinks. Highly recommend you guys do that. And if you do it, use my promo code MROD20. Save yourself a couple of dollars. And also, I just want to give a huge shout out to all my sparring partners. They all helped me out. They're awesome. They're the best I can ever ask for. They will fucking do anything for me in a drop of a hat, and I'll do the same for them. Give a huge shout out to SOS. Oh, yeah. SOS. Mike is just a man. He's always helped me get ready for camps and stuff. Huge shout out to Tyson, Auntie Ty Ty. He's always looking out. And yeah, you can follow me at MROD MMA on Instagram, Twitter. If you have a Discord, on Discord. Yeah, pretty much it.
And there was my conversation with Mike Rodriguez. I appreciate him coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Talk about his fight coming up here on Saturday morning from South Korea. And, of course, before we get into previewing all of this week's MMA, I do want to let you know about our presenting sponsor this week, and that is Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, like saying something like, well, I lost my mojo, or avoid altogether excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe you real medications, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward. It's simple and discreet. Getting started is simple. All you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. All you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
As you just heard Daniel say, just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free visit. And to get started, GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And, of course, if you ever need that that unique URL link, it's right here in the notes of this podcast, whether you're listening to this on RadioInfluence.com, on the MMAReport.com, or your favorite podcasting platform. If you're listening on a platform like Apple Podcasts and you love what you're hearing, really would appreciate if you give us a five-star rating and review. It really helps help us with this podcast. But, Daniel, we've got three events coming up this weekend. Well, two Bellator events are in Hawaii, and then, of course, the UFC card in South Korea on Saturday morning. I want to start off here with the UFC event. And I wrote down this question kind of in a little sheet that we shared together about what we're going to talk about. And I said, does the start time of the UFC fight card affect our interest in the card? Because if you told me that this fight card was in the afternoon, late morning, even at night, I think I might have more interest. But the fact that it does start so early, I'm not getting up to watch it. The Bucks have a game on Saturday, so I get to the stadium about 8:30 in the morning. So I'm not getting up at 2 a.m. to watch prelims. Typically on game days, I get up about 6:30 in the morning. So I'll see what fights are on at that point. But yeah, the early start time definitely does affect my interest in it. But there are fights on the card that do interest me.
Yeah, there's 0% chance I'm watching this live. I mean, this is like this is the worst time ever to watch a fight card, unless it's a special fight card. Like, the only time I've ever watched fight cards at this hour is whenever they would do the New Year's Eve shows in MMA. I would watch that, and I did watch that. I will not do that for this time. But you know what? You get to wake up and the fights are already on demand and you can just boom, 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 pick and choose what you want to see. And this is a fight card where if you are a fan who has other things to do, there's only a few fights to be interested in. it's really Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie, obviously a notable fight. Volkan Ozdemir, Alexander Rakic is a notable fight. Watching Duho Choi is something to keep an eye on. You know, Alexander Pantoja versus Matt Schnell is really interesting because Matt Schnell has just had a lot of success in the flyweight division. And there's a couple other things, but if you're an MMA fan, I think you just got to wake up, read the results, and see what's worth going out and watching. Unfortunately, people are going to have that ability. But yeah, I mean, overall, none of these cards that we're about to talk about get me excited too terribly much.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of, you know, we'll talk about the Bellator event here shortly. I mean, you know, the main event, and obviously it was supposed to be Brian Ortega against the Korean Zombie, and you know, Ortega has the injury that forced him out of the event. And, you know, I know there were multiple other fighters that reached out to the UFC. I know Calvin Kattar and his team reached out to the UFC. They were ready to jump into this opportunity, but basically was told we already got somebody. And, of course, that somebody was Frankie Edgar, which is just – it's an odd fight booking. You know, yes, these guys were supposed to fight, what, a year or 2 years ago. But you got Frankie Edgar, who is making his way down to 35. And now, so he's going to take this fight at 45 where, Daniel, I think most likely he's going to knock off a challenger at 145. So from the UFC's aspect, outside of, you know, quote unquote, saving the main event, I don't understand the thought process in this fight.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying in that Frankie Edgar just doesn't lose to too many guys. And Korean Zombie is, you know, win-loss. This is the fight where I think he's definitely going to lose to Frankie Edgar, and he's going to knock off a challenger. Edgar's going to drop down to 135. And you're right, for the UFC value, a Kattar Korean Zombie fight would have meant more to the featherweight division. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this one, you have Edgar getting a win. That won't mean too much in the context of the bantamweight division. Because I feel like with a win against Korean Zombie, he would have still got a similar fight to whatever he gets first at bantamweight. It's going to be a top tier fight. Edgar's a top tier fighter. Mm-hmm. The one thing is, like, I am looking forward to this fight. It's a fight between two of the more important featherweights in the UFC this past decade. And that's why it's interesting to me just to see these two guys match it up. And I think Korean Zombie, I mean, I think there's only been like one time in his entire UFC career where he hasn't won a performance of the night or a knockout of the night or a submission of the night. And that was when he took on Jose Aldo.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned about Frankie only loses to the top of the top fighters. I mean, let's look at his losses. Max Holloway, Brian Ortega, Jose Aldo, Benson Henderson, you know, and of course he had the draw against Greg Maynard and losing to Greg Maynard back in 2008. This guy just doesn't lose, you know. So from the UFC's aspect, I don't necessarily understand it. I mean, the question, you know, I mean, look, yeah, I always say this, Father Time ultimately catches up with people, but, you know, the fact is, can Chan Sung Jung keep this fight on the feet? Chan Sung Jung does train now in Arizona, trains at Fight Ready. You know, which is one of the coaches there is his striking coach, Eddie Cha. That's where you know, the likes of Henry Cejudo and the Pitbull brothers, when they come to America, that's where they train. So there is something there. But from a fight aspect, I don't understand why you make this. I mean, you mentioned about some of the other fights or fighters that definitely stick out to me. Alexander Rakic in the co-main event against Volkan Ozdemir is, you know, really kind of this, you know, this benchmark of is Alexander Rakic a top five challenger at 205 pounds. Obviously, Duho Choi, you know, I think everyone's interested to watch him fight. Cyril Gagne, I think that's another one that people are going to stick out to. I mean, Tanner Boser, you know, this is a Canadian fighter who, you know, fought tough competition in Russia, comes into the UFC. So I think it's a nice test for Cyril Gagne. And you mentioned about it, you know, Alexander Pantoja versus Matt Schnell. You know, it's probably, when I look at the fights that, you know, from a fight aspect, that really interests me. I mean, I'm interested to watch Edgar and Korean Zombie, but I feel like I know what's going to happen in that fight. Pantoja Snell may be the number two fight on this card.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is for sure. It could be three. I mean, I think I have it three, but it's like that's a compelling fight from both sides of the coin. Pantoja, incredibly just a youthful fighter for a while in this flyweight division who just flashed potential from the Ultimate Fighter, versus Matt Schnell, who, again, Matt Schnell just constantly improves. I mean, I remember watching him in Legacy Fighting, and he was just a greenhorn. And now he's, like, went here, and he's just vaulted up big time in the flyweight division. The flyweight division is starting to get interesting. I think Schnell's going to win. I think Rakic is going to win over Volkan Ozdemir. This is a benchmark fight. I like the way you put it. Ozdemir's a proven guy, a proven commodity, whereas Rakic is just highlight reel win, climbing up their ranks. But we've seen guys get stifled. I think Duho Choi is going to put together a highlight reel. And then, like, Korean Zombie, like, I do think he's going to lose. But the flip side is, if Korean Zombie beats Frankie Edgar in Busan, South Korea, we have now just seen the greatest South Korean MMA moment of all time. So there is that side of the equation, is that, you know, that would be the ultimate Korean MMA moment up until this point in time. So there is upside there in that the South Korean fans get to watch their own hero, Korean Zombie, put away Frankie Edgar. And even though Edgar is the favorite in this fight, and I think he's going to win, it's certainly possible. You mentioned Father Time, and a lot of times when Father Time strikes, it's these, like, brief moments where, ooh, and Korean Zombie's a slight favorite, by the way, as I'm looking at the odds. Really? But it's these, yeah.
I haven't even looked at the odds. Wow.
Yeah. He's minus 170.
Really?
Yeah. And I think it's because he's explosive. And, like, when we see Father Time strike, it's that boom, that shot, and the guy's down, is round one, and it's over. And that might be what takes place. But yeah, man, when you're looking at the betting odds, and we'll just take Five Dimes, for example.
Dude, if I'm in Vegas, I'm laying money on Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, Frankie Edgar is plus 155 according to Five Dimes. So yeah, man, you have that. And then also, if you guys want the odds for the light heavyweight fight, Volkan Ozdemir is plus 125 and Alexander Rakic is minus 145.
Wow. I'm shocked by those odds in the main event. I'm shocked.
Yeah. And by the way, Schnell's an underdog, so I'm picking him to win. He's plus 190.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like Schnell to win that fight. Of course, on Friday and Saturday in Hawaii, we've got the Bellator events, Bellator 235 and Bellator 236. And yesterday, Bellator PR sends out a press release with the fight cards, and I just, you know, screenshot it and I put it on my Twitter timeline. And there was a response here from @Stamkos69. He says, man, these cards are rotten. Last year's Hawaii cards were loaded. Can't argue. So I pulled up what last year's Bellator Hawaii events were. So your main event on the Friday card was Chandler versus Primus. You also had Ayala versus Mir. AJ McKee was on the card. Sam Cecilia was on the card. And then the Saturday card was headlined by Limale McFarlane and Val Eterno. Machida was on that card. They had Neiman Gracie versus Ed Ruth, Lee McCary versus King Mo. The person on Twitter, you can't argue with them.
Yeah, no, this fight card is
I'm not going to use the word rotten, but yeah. It's not. You know, I think if you are a MMA fan in Hawaii, if you're comparing last year's to this year's cards, you say, man, I'd much rather have last year's cards.
And it happens a lot of time with MMA promotions. They make their first foray into a new market, and they just lay it in with awesome fight cards. Think of UFC in Canada, and now think of UFC in Canada now. And it's like, whoa. Or UFC in England now, and it's like, whoa. But still, it's a bit of a shame because Limale McFarlane in Hawaii is a special moment. The last time she fought, the entrance was unbelievable. And it's an opportunity to put guys on those cards that are gonna strike out. And honest to God, there's only one fight that interests me on that undercard. AJ McKee, Derek Campos, the featherweight quarterfinal. And it's a fight where AJ McKee's an 800 a favorite. So,
wow,
you know,
he's that big of a favorite. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's 800 and Derek Campos is plus 500.
I shouldn't say I'm surprised it's that high. I wouldn't say I'm shocked.
Yeah. I'm surprised it is because in this, it's not like AJ McKee's an unbeatable featherweight champion. He's still a youthful featherweight who's had some nice victories, looked dominant. Campos is a tested veteran, and he's been around a while. So the odds that's that high are crazy. Still picking AJ McKee. But I mean, like these fight cards, like, and I'm interested in the main event of the Bellator 235 just because I want to see Josh Barnett fight. It's been 3 years. We don't know what kind of fighter he is. Is he still a top tier heavyweight? We'll get that answer against Hani Marks. But I mean, the rest of the card is just a whole lot of nothing. It's a whole lot of showcase fights. You know, Joey Davis versus Chris Cisneros. That's a showcase fight for Davis. Eric Perez has a showcase fight against Helby Mish. Tywin Claxton has a showcase fight against a guy who I think has one professional fight. It's overall a showcase night of fights for Bellator.
Yeah. You know, Josh Barnett, I mean, you do feel that this is a fight that if he goes out there and gets a win, he will be next for Ryan Bader at heavyweight, which is something that, you know, Josh has talked about this week. Toby Misek taking on Eric Perez. Actually, you can go on the MMAReport.com. You can see my interview, you know, with him. You know, really the big takeaway from that interview was simply that just how frustrated he was, you know, kind of with how everything played out in February with his fight against Eduardo Dantas. And flat out said he's hoping for a war. He's hoping that Eric Perez is going to want to come and fight. And you know, I took it as basically, I hope this guy's ready to throw some hands, you know, because that's what I want to do here. You know, I mean, Laura or Vita Ortega, I mean, that's a notable fight in the women's division there. You know, Tywin Claxton's opponent, Brandon Akao, actually have an interview that I'm going to be editing here later on today, so that should be up on the MMAReport.com here on Wednesday night. I mean, you mentioned Joey Davis. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a showcase fight. I heard Kevin Ioli, I was watching his interview with Dana White from last week, And he was talking about, they were talking about boxing, and he didn't use the word showcase for what the undercards of boxing. He called it appearance fights. I was like, ooh, like that's even harsher, I think.
Yeah, that is absolutely harsh.
Like that's a showcase. I you know, but like, man, appearance fight. I'm like, oof, man, that is, ooh, like that to me is a little worse there. You know, I mean, you do mention, I mean, obviously on Saturday, Alima Lay is, I think, is one of the most valuable fighters under contract with Bellator. You know, obviously, I think there was an interesting article this week posted on Fanside where she talked about kind of the mental side of the game of in her last camp of, you know, when she was having issues with her weight cut of just kind of where it was. And, you know, I don't know how many fighters are willing to be that open and honest. And I know every time that I've had a chance to, you know, interview Alima, that was like one of the things I always take away from, you know, chatting with her. I was like, man, she's just brutally honest with you. She doesn't hold anything back. You know, I mean, clearly McKee Campos is a fight that interests you the most. Neiman Gracie was supposed to take on Kunimoto, but he's out due to a broken hand. Jason Jackson steps up to take that fight. The one fighter on the Bellator 236 card that I am interested to see how he performs, and that's Rafion Stouts. This is a fighter that, quite frankly, he has been trying to get into the UFC, but the UFC just basically, they were not interested in him, you know, and you know, because of, you know, kind of the way his fighting style is, and obviously Bellator's has landed. I do feel like, I think the next Bellator tournament is going to be 135.
And damn, that would be interesting as hell. And Rafion Stouts is a guy with a nice pedigree in the LFA and gets a win here. Could absolutely put himself in that in a lower seed and you know, allow his skill level to take him to the title. And that's the benefit. Even if you have more of a boring style, if you get an opportunity to be in a tournament, you have the ability to climb up and get championship status. So, yeah, I think 135 would be one interesting tournament for sure. And, I mean, yeah, we're still in the quarterfinals of the featherweight tournament as it slowly plods along.
Yeah, yeah, long way to go as the quarterfinals are going to play out over the next 3 or 4 months or so. You know, obviously, you know, we mentioned about, you know, McKee Campos is a fight between the two Bellator cards that, you know, is the one fight that sticks out to you. But is that the one fight we have to watch this weekend?
Oh.
Is there a fight on the UFC card you would value more?
I would go Korean Zombie Edgar Moore, valuable. Yeah. It's the fight I want to watch.
This is my problem with, you know, and we always talk about this, is you got to give me a reason to be in front of the television set or be in front of my my iPad or computer or whatever it may be, and when I look at it, particularly the Bellator cards outside of McKee Campos, you know, I'll be home on Friday night. You know, typically, you know, Friday night I go out with the fellas, but since I got to be up early the next morning, I won't be doing that. If I'm still awake at 10 p.m. Eastern time, I'll put the fights on, but it's not like I have to watch it. You know, it's kind of one of those cards I sit there and say I'll watch it after the fact because, you know, I value sleep, man. Just being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got to come up with an a la carte menu for the casual MMA fan to be like, all right, you need to watch these five fights from the weekend.
Look, I am interested to wake up on Saturday morning and just go through my Twitter timeline and see what reporters were up at 2 a.m. covering fights.
Well, hey, man, if the paycheck clears, you better do your job.
Damn right, yeah. I hope that if you're live tweeting about fights at 2 a.m., you're getting paid for it. If you're a reporter, I hope for it. But, yeah, it's definitely a fight card that I'm not getting up early for. But, I'll tune in when I get up on Saturday morning, which will be around 6:30 in the morning. Something to mention about Bellator. Of course, they've got the Japan event next Saturday night. It'll be Sunday afternoon in Japan. The Bellator portion of the event will be regulated by Mike Mazzulli of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations. The Bellator event will be under the unified rules of MMA. Of course, the Ryzen event will be under what people would classify as Pride rules. But did talk to Mike Mazzulli, and he confirmed that the drug testing has been going on for this event. He's been going around and drug testing various fighters. I know that Michael Chandler and Sidney Outlaw are two of the fighters that have been drug tested for this one. So those drug test results have not come back, but obviously they will be back before the fight does happen. So, out of competition testing, obviously it's nowhere near what we see with the UFC and USADA, but there is a drug testing going on there. Two other things we want to mention here on the podcast. I was going through my Twitter timeline this morning, Daniel, and I see this story from MMAJunkie.com saying about how ESPN is raising the cost of UFC pay-per-views to $64.99 in 2020. This, of course, they've been at $59.99, and this was the quote in the article. ESPN Plus is an incredible value to UFC fans, and this price change represents a return to the price that UFC fans traditionally paid prior to ESPN Plus decreasing the price for the pay-per-view events for most of 2019. Now, for this, it's not really, for me, I'm kind of indifferent in terms of them doing this. I mean, I wouldn't say that I am shocked by this, but when I saw this, one of the things that kind of really stuck out to me is just the comments that you saw on Twitter. Pretty much, I would say majority of them were negative, but it made me think about, I understand why ESPN is doing this, but I wonder how close are we to seeing the every month UFC pay-per-view is more in the range of $70 to $75 as opposed to $65.
Well, we're a lot closer today than we were yesterday. I mean, I think the prices will rise, and it's largely due to the fact that they paid a lot of money for this content, and they got to make their money back. The buy rates aren't there. And I think the pay-per-view price will continue to rise. I think when we'll see big money fights, I think they'll rise even higher. I think, for Khan, and they did it interestingly because, the next pay-per-view is a fight people are going to pay for. They're going to pay $64 for McGregor Cerrone. And so,
Daniel.
Time McGregor fights, they might raise up that price by $5.
If McGregor does not make it to fight night, that's not a pay-per-view card.
Yeah, people are not going to spend. I mean, the thing is, if Conor misses out, you got to ask who steps in against Cowboy. I don't know who that is because that's the only way you save that card because that card is top heavy when it comes to pay-per-view quality main events.
Yeah, here's the 246 lineup. McGregor Cerrone, Fahea Pettis, Gedalia Grasso, Holm Pennington, Feely Youssef, Barber Modafari, Dober Haparas, Olenek Green, Kamir Ledet, Dawson Skelly, Aldrich versus Mazo, Askarov versus Elliott, and Kelleher versus Osborne. If for some reason, and this is like, like UFC 245, it was so deep. Like you were just, you loved it. But I look at that pay-per-view and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm paying for it as long as it's Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone. But if for some reason McGregor doesn't make it the fight night, I don't know how the UFC can sell that as a pay-per-view.
I don't know. I think you call Jorge Masvidal and you're like, hey, we need a favor. You call the Diaz brother and you're like, hey, we need a favor. Because
I would be much more interested in Nate Diaz versus Donald Cerrone than I would be Donald Cerrone against Jorge Masvidal.
Oh yeah, no, that would be murder.
I mean, it's the one thing that, you know, I think as combat sports connoisseurs, and that's the thing the UFC has always maintained, is we're not boxing, we're not going to put on a one fight pay per view, but. You know, it's just, you know, for me, you know, in my taste of MMA, if you told me Conor McGregor was not fighting on January 18th, I don't know how I could fork over $65 to watch this card.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. I don't know at all, Jason. And there's going to be plenty of pay-per-views where I'm going to have that question. For sure. In the future.
Now, look, as someone who handles bar marketing and we have a new location that's going to be showing UFC pay-per-views. Does that kind of intrigue me that we might get some more people to come out to watch the fights? Yes, no question. I think that the more that the residential cost for pay-per-views go up, it will actually benefit the commercial side of, you know, bars and restaurants and more people. You know, I will tell you this. So I'm sitting in Twin Peaks watching the fights. I forget what fight it was. It may have been a Pierre-Jan fight, and this guy gets up like in front of his table. He's like, "Give me my money," because clearly they were betting on the fights. And I'm just like sitting there, just dying laughing. I'm like, "This is what I miss about not going out to at bars, because you see some quality entertainment when you're at a bar watching UFC fights."
I know, man. That's the best part about it, man. Is watching people be people. The casual fans get that money. Get those beers, get those wings, and that's the fun part about, you know, it's a bigger society thing, man. There's so much content, so many things where we're watching it in our bed, we're binge watching stuff, and we're just so isolated. What I love is when we go out, we congregate, and we just watch things together. So often we are watching things on our own time on demand, and that's my favorite part about live sports nowadays that I really appreciate, is it's that like communal experience. Well, so it's cool to watch crazy people be crazy.
And I've said this before, I think when you go out to a bar to watch a UFC pay-per-view, it gives you a very good sense of who are the stars of the sport, who are the fighters that people get interested in. I mean, you know, there's, I think at times is of doing what we do and, you know, other people in the MMA reporting industry do, we get stuck in that Twitter bubble and we get stuck in thinking about, hey, this is what gets clicks, but, you know, and this is what people care about on MMA Twitter. But you go to a bar, man, you can, I've always said this, you go to a bar that runs UFC pay-per-views and you ask the manager, that person may be the most knowledgeable person on who's a star and a man who isn't.
100%. The bubble can like hide so much. As much, you know, we may care about these fight connoisseur fights, but the casual fans may not. And if you're someone who's a bar manager or whatever, you know for a fact who's drawing people and who people are reacting to.
Now what I do really wonder with ESPN is, are we any potentially closer to an NFL Sunday ticket type package for UFC pay-per-views?
I don't think so, because I think they need to get as much money as they can. And if you're charging someone like $120 a year
I would be thinking that you would charge, it would basically be like,
what would it be?
$50 to $55 per pay-per-view, but you got to buy all 12, right at the start.
Okay, that's a big one, dude. Yeah, I mean, you're basically telling someone $600, pay for that for a year's worth of content.
But if you know you're going to buy every UFC pay-per-view, why would you not do it?
Yeah, I mean, you might as well offer it. You might as well put it out there.
I think what ESPN has figured out, they say, we know what our baseline is, and we figure that raising it $5 is not going to change that baseline. And I agree with them. I don't think $5... is going to change it. But if you put out a, you know, I mean, look, it's, if you put out a fight card that is, you know, if you say, hey, I got to pay $65 for, you know, what we saw this past weekend, or $65 for a pay-per-view that's not as up to that par. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, fans are always going to, and as we always say, we're not telling you whether you should or should not buy a pay-per-view. That's ultimately your decision if you want to buy it. But I think that, you know, I just wonder, does ESPN maybe look at this and say, you know what, this may, we may lose a little money, but, you know, there, you know, we kind of know if we say we figure 200,000 people are going to buy every UFC pay-per-view, could we do something, you know, unique to get people more interested? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that would reward your hardcore fan, but that's also going to probably take money out of your pocket because or, that's the one
could,
fan.
Or could it be a situation where, you know, obviously they're under the Disney umbrella. Could there be some type of bundle package they put together where you get the UFC pay-per-view, Disney Plus, Hulu, because three things they bundled together. Oh, ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. You know, could they bundle something together?
They could, but I still feel like for the make or break isn't going to be that bundle type deal. It's going to be fight day people purchasing these pay per views. I mean, that's the largest numbers of people making those purchases, and so I think those.
I don't think I've ever bought a pay per view more than 8 hours in advance.
Yeah, me neither. Never.
I've never gotten the whole, like, I'm not going. I guess it's because we know this industry too well. The fact that something could change in a matter in an hour notice.
I just don't do, you're right, but I also just don't do it because I procrastinate. But I mean, a bunch of procrastinators, but you're right. I mean, that's why we talk suspiciously Cerrone Cowboy, like wait until fight day to make sure that fight card is happening. You don't want to spend $65 and get Cowboy Cerrone versus Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, amazing. Conor McGregor's been arrested by police because he's being extradited to Ireland.
Ireland, yeah. That would, yeah. And that's one, it could be an injury, could be so many things.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Kudos to Kevin Ioli for asking Dana White about that. In terms of that, you know, still at the end of the day, I would like to hear Conor McGregor. But we do want to end this week's podcast by the major news here on Wednesday that Rory McDonald, the former Bellator welterweight champion, has signed with the Professional Fighters League. It was reported on Wednesday morning by Ariel Helwani. And, Daniel, I did not see this one coming. I was pretty surprised by this. You know, it made me think about something we talked about last week on the show, that interview with the PFL co-founder where, you know, he talked about the promotion is going to make some big moves. I've had some people kind of, you know, make some guesses to me, the feeling that maybe you're going to see more North American fighters in the PFL for season three. You know, I got a response here on Twitter from Douglas Hill. He says, I'm a big fan of Rory. We'll follow him to the PFL and watch the fights. Having seen his last few fights, can't help but think, are the wheels falling off? Also, Brandon Guzman says, what happens first? Rory wins $1 million or PFL folds? I don't know how they make any money. You know, Brandon, I'm with you. I have no idea how PFL makes money. I have no idea how they do it. To me, maybe this is kind of like, hey, we're going to make our splash here. We're going to see if we can get this thing to work. It's a great signing, but I think that, you know, I would imagine that Bellator had matching rights. I would imagine they did. So that tells me that, you know, if that is the case, that the PFL opened up the bank big time because Rory was making really nice money, in Bellator. But there are guys at 170 that I look at Rory McDonald and I'm like, I don't know if he beats them.
Yeah, I think this is a great move for Rory because, again, I don't think he's got what it takes to be the best welterweight in the world anymore. I think he's a top shelf welterweight for sure. But as we saw in the Lima fight, I don't necessarily think he's going to have the ability to climb that Mount Everest and be known as the best welterweight in the world, which is something he nearly did early on in his career. I think he has a skill set to just run through the field in the PFL roster. I think it's a nice signing for the pro PFL because it gets me personally more interested in the tournament. Rory is one of the top welterweights in the world still. And I have no idea how the PFL makes money for sure. I'm sure he signed it for a pretty penny. But yeah, this is something that draws me to watch a PFL event. And that's the type of signings PFL are going to have to do to make this thing a success on ESPN2.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that welterweight division, you know, I think the name that to me sticks out above anybody else would be Magomed Karamov. Could he go out there and defeat him? I mean, to me, he's the one guy that sticks out to you. Of course, the finals are going to be David Machado versus Ray Cooper III, second straight year. Ray Cooper III has made it to the finals. That'll be in 13 days, Daniel, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll preview that next week, right?
I guess we should announce this next week and the following week. We're doing the show on Monday because let's see, next Wednesday is Christmas. Yes, Christmas is already here, Daniel. And then the following Wednesday is New Year's Day. So we'll be doing the show on Monday. So yeah, I guess we'll be. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week in the following week.
I tell you what. So we're doing it 2 weeks from now then.
Monday the 30th. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'll give us plenty to talk about. So.
Yeah, you know. But I mean, look, signing Rory McDonald. That's a huge signing for PFL. I mean, clearly the biggest signing they've ever had. And you know, maybe you could argue Kayla Harrison. But I think in terms of what Rory has done, I mean, it's a tremendous signing, and kudos for PFL for pulling it off.
Yeah, we can no longer make the joke about like Kayla Harrison being the only fighter that the PFL has on their roster now. But, now they have Rory McDonald too.
Have you seen the poster for the championships on New Year's Eve?
Is it just Kayla Harrison?
It's Kayla Harrison, and then like every other fighter standing behind her.
Yeah.
Which well, I'm like, you know what? It's right. I mean that Kayla Harrison is the reason that you're gonna tune those fights in on New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is one of those things. I just sit on the couch now. I don't go out. I just sit on the couch. I mean, my wife like watch a movie, stay up till midnight, and then I go to bed.
Yeah, you're a full-fledged mature adult.
Yeah, I can remember the days like, oh yeah, we're gonna go out, we're gonna party. Yeah, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah,
like, the place I go to on Friday nights, the manager's like, "Oh yeah, we're doing New Year's Eve, celebration here. It's all you can eat, all you can drink type thing." And I'm like, "Well, my wife doesn't drink, so not really a reason." But yeah, it's that's amateur night in the bar business, folks. Amateur night. By the way, we got to end on this note here, Daniel. Do we got a little side bet going on for Saturday?
No, because I have no confidence that I think the Bucks are going to beat the Texans, man. You work for the Buccaneers, and I've been Houston Texans are my team. I tell you what, I've had Jameis Winston on my fantasy football team, and I know how good he is, man. He's been racking up points for me week in, week out, and I feel like we're going to lose to the Bucks. And then just set up a play-in game against the Titans. But I have no confidence, man, because I tell you what, the one thing Jameis Winston can do is he can put up points. So
our good listener, Joe in Houston, he's like, "Hey, you got some side bets?" Like, well, we'll let this cat out of the bag. Me and Daniel are talking about coming to Houston for the UFC pay-per-view and doing some shows up there. So during that week, I said, "Yeah, maybe we'll have to go with a side bet. We'll pay it off that week. You know, maybe it's like loser buys drinks or something.
Loser buys the tickets, or to the airplane and the hotel. Dude, I like that one.
I was looking at. I'm not going to sit on press row. I want to sit in the stands. I started looking at ticket prices. Like,
yeah.
Ooh, they ain't cheap, dude. It's I think the cheapest 100 level ticket I think was $225.
100 level was like the lower bowl.
Yeah. So not the floor. The 100 level lower bowl. Yeah. The cheapest you would find was $225. Like if you wanted like in the center, a lower bowl, I think it was like $300.
Yeah.
I was like, I
damn. At the very top, it's like $150, $120.
I think Access is who are you buy the tickets for that one. And they got scale. I think it started at $100.
Damn. Yeah. So I think we'll make it out there. I think we got to watch John Jones fight. And
I was kind of hoping the Rockets would be playing home on Friday, but they're not.
I want
to see no defense basketball.
Yeah. I know. I want to see Harden and Westbrook. Hey, the only guys I see are the Vipers.
Yeah, so. But yeah, that's God, that's what, you know, 2 months away. Yeah, I was actually I was looking at airplane tickets to Houston. There's a really cheap flight coming home on Sunday, but I just can't do it.
No,
it's a 6 a.m. flight.
Yeah, no,
I'm like, that's, oh man, pay per view doesn't until 1. Ugh, I don't think
that's why it's cheap. It just drop you off at the airport.
Literally, you must just go straight to the airport once the fights are over.
Yeah, man. Damn. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no, I think it was like, you know, it was like $100 coming back. I'm like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. No, I couldn't do that. Nope. 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 I've done that early morning flight after like covering an event, man. That's it's brutal, man. It's brutal. But yeah, we're definitely looking into doing that. And of course, if you ever have any questions or comments, for the podcast, you know, one of the best ways just do it is just tweet at either one of us at Jason_Foy or at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Also, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor this week. That is Roman. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.